You are listening to a sermon by Annika Kraus, recorded on Sunday, January 29, 2017, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, good morning. I'm very happy to be back here. I think there's no greater encouragement for a novice preacher than to be invited back to a church a second time. So thank you. Well, as you heard, last week Jonas preached on the foolishness of the cross, and this week my sermon title is Ridiculous. We've got a bit of a theme going, but I promise you it wasn't planned. So I'm focusing on the ridiculousness of the Beatitudes. I think many people imagine that Matthew was written by the disciple, the man who knew Jesus the Nazarene, the itinerant preacher. But Matthew actually contains information that suggests that it was written at least 70 years after Jesus' death, and is written in Greek, so that it was not written by this disciple, the tax collector. Instead, what scholars believe to be the case is something called the two-source theory, which means that it was written using the Gospel of Mark, which is the oldest gospel, and something called Q, or Quelle, and Q is a collection of sayings. Jesus' teachings and parables were shared orally, and sometime after his death, people decided to start writing them down to preserve them. And so this Q source is that collection of phrases and parables that are attributed to Jesus that were later on used by other gospel writers to create their account of Jesus. And in the Beatitudes, the way that it's written, the list, you can see this use of phrases that come from this Q material. Matthew is also written by a Jew living in the Roman Empire, where there was a large disparity between the wealthy and the poor. With the overarching empire, there were also oligarchies, wealthy families with political authority in their regions, with military support and backing of the religious groups. There was no middle class, and those on the lower end of the social hierarchy were considered inherently lesser. They were of lesser value than those who had money and power. The early church was coming together, but they met in secret, because being a follower of the man named Jesus, who was crucified by Rome, was not only socially unacceptable, but had potentially devastating consequences. In fact, Christianity wouldn't even become legal until the 4th century, at least 200 years after this gospel was written. Also, the 1st century had a strong sense of apocalypticism, which was called parousia. They believed that Jesus was going to come again almost immediately. They saw Jesus' death as more of a gone today, but back tomorrow. It's a bit of an overstatement, but the first century church strongly believed that Jesus was going to return soon in a reign of glory. Now, with this in mind, let's jump into the text. The Beatitudes is a list of antithetical statements that flip societal values on their heads. In a word, they're ridiculous. And it's not hard to see how those in power in a hierarchical society would do all that they could to nip the teachings of this pesky, countercultural advocate for the poor in the bud. I mean, blessed are the poor in spirit? It sounds a little bit ridiculous, right? But let's take a second look at what Jesus is saying here. It's not necessarily that being in need is holy. It's the idea that we should be humble and not cling to earthly entrapments. We should share what we have with one another. Jesus, after all, came as a servant and associated with the lowly, the unclean, the untouchables. He did not seek material wealth for himself, and yet he led an amazingly rich life on earth. Blessed are those who mourn. I know it says that those who mourn are going to be comforted, but how could it be a blessing to grieve? This beatitude is calling people to mourn the brokenness in this world. God created us to live in peace with God's self, our brothers and sisters, and all of creation. And blessed are those who can see how far this world has fallen. Biblical scholar Michael Crosby said that healing will never come within the infrastructure until we first admit the existence of sins and cultural addictions that contribute to the human and societal brokenness, then mourn over them. We cannot start to fix a problem before we know what it is or how deep it goes. Both when this is written and in Vancouver today, there's a problem with the disparity of wealth. Vancouver has some of the wealthiest people in Canada, but it also contains the poorest postal code, and we should mourn that. The meek will inherit the earth. You can almost hear somebody piping up saying, "The meek, I'm glad they're getting something because they have a heck of a time." Let's be honest. On nobody's list of leadership qualities is the word meek written. When you go to a job interview and they ask you, "So what qualities do you bring?" Nobody says meekness. So what is Jesus getting at here? It's submission to God. Those who put God's will above their own will be part of the new earth that is promised. And you can see some of that apocalypticism coming through here. Now the next few Beatitudes talk about standing up for justice within a framework of restoring right relationship with God, our fellow humans, and creation. A framework for restoring shalom and ushering in the new kingdom. It's not seizing authority with a sword. It's using peace and justice to create a truly egalitarian society under God's reign. There is a theological idea known as Gelassenheit that I think works well with the Beatitudes. Gelassenheit is an old German word that translates into yieldedness and means choosing to yield to God's will above our own. This is both an inward and an outward commitment. It's an inner change and outward actions. The idea is that we should allow God to change who we are as individuals, who we are as a society, and who we are in society. The concept of Gelassenheit emerged during the Protestant Reformation from a man named Andreas Karlstadt, who was a colleague of Martin Luther, and many 16th century Anabaptists have absorbed this concept into their own theologies. And it has influenced the Anabaptist ideas around community, shared wealth, and holding things in common. And Gelassenheit, like the Beatitudes, is not limited to our personal relationships with God or even our interpersonal relationships with each other. Both teach us to restructure our social order and conform to God's will and a Christocentric or Christ-centered manner of thinking and living. According to the Beatitudes, this means decreasing our personal wealth by sharing resources, speaking about the brokenness in the world, and offering mercy and showing peace to those who hurt us. This is a far cry from the world's understanding of redemptive violence, wealth, and power. Now, this may seem a little out of the way, but stick with me for a second. As I told you just a minute ago, I did my thesis work on film theology, and I argued that filmmakers are the storytellers of our time. And as such, I think you can use popular films as a means of gauging the values in our society. At the very least, we can see how our society views power. So I want to share with you a few of the top grossing movies from 2016. Rogue One, Star Wars, is the top one, and it made $513,751,825 and is still in theaters. And number three is Captain America, six, Deadpool, eight, Batman, and number nine, Suicide Squad. And what do they have in common? Redemptive violence. That the idea that violence, and pretty extreme violence in the case of these movies, is an acceptable way of maintaining order and gaining peace. Peace comes at the end of a gun. Now, I'm not a fan of censorship, and I'm not saying that we should stop watching movies or even that you shouldn't watch the movies that I just mentioned. I'm simply saying, allow them to show us how far our society's values are from a beatitudinal way of living. The violence and power we see displayed in these movies is egocentric. The Beatitudes are calling us to abandon our egos so we can follow in Christ's footsteps. With our culture's values being so far from a beatitudinal way of life, it's clear that living out Jesus' commands to reshape societal structures will court ridicule. If you choose to follow the Beatitudes, if you attempt to make these commands your life, you will be ridiculed, and you should be prepared for that. Now, the last couple of verses in the Beatitudes talk about persecution. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake. And blessed are you when people revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. If I'm honest, I think these verses have been overquoted. I have thought of them when people tease me for my faith. I have thought of them when my SFU profs made jokes about Christianity in their lectures. And I've heard them used to bolster Christian youth's faith. That's not exactly what's being talked about in these couple of verses. The persecution being talked about here is life-threatening. Now, I want to recognize that there are people in this congregation who can relate to these couple of verses in ways that I cannot. I want to acknowledge that and respect that. But many of us don't know that fear and can only imagine it. Remember that during the time when this was written, being a follower of Jesus was illegal. It was a criminal offense. And spreading anti-empire mentality like this was treason. It landed the Son of God on a cross. Now, last Sunday, Jonas was preaching on the cross and challenged each of us to think about its significance. That challenge has been with me all week as I've been preparing my sermon, and I offer this thought. Perhaps the significance of the cross lies in the Beatitude. God came to earth to show us how to love each other radically. Perhaps the cross is meant to show us that the social reform being preached in the Sermon on the Mount, is worth standing up for, worth dying for, even dying on a cross. Now, as a conclusion, I'd like to share with you my reimagining of the Beatitudes. Blessed are those who give freely and liberally of themselves and their resources, for they will see the richness of God's kingdom. Blessed are those who weep in solidarity with the mentally ill, the addicted, the homeless, and all kinds of people pushed to the fringes of society, for they will be wrapped in God's loving arms. Blessed are the ones who sacrifice their own egos on God's altar, for they will see a new creation budding up from the ground. Blessed are those who know that justice is as important as bread and righteousness is as necessary as water, for they will be sustained. Blessed are those who reflect God's love into the world, for God will show them perfect love. Blessed are those who constantly strive to act out God's goodness in this broken world, for God will be revealed to them. Blessed are those who put themselves in harm's way for the sake of peace, for they are precious to God. Blessed are those who endure slander because of their faith and have to defend their beliefs to people who want to cut them down, for they are helping to usher in the new kingdom. And blessed are you, fellow disciples, when the world hates you and uses its many hands to cover your mouth or wrap around your throat. For your glory is in your Father in heaven and amongst the cloud of witnesses who came before you. Amen.